from? And where are we going?
A warm welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. Thank you for tuning in to our broadcast. This is Henrik Palmgren coming to you from the west coast of Sweden up in Scandinavia. Our radio program is available around the globe where internet is available through our website redicecreations.com. News, radio, film and much more. Every Sunday and Thursday we are here with a new radio program talking with interesting researchers about important topics. And I'm glad you're here today because we do have an important topic and an interesting guest with us. It's a real treat to have David Icke with us on the line. We had David with us for the first time in May last year. It's been a while, so we couldn't be happier to have him back with us again. David is behind titles such as Children of the Matrix, The Biggest Secret, Tales from the Time Loop, just to name a few. And he's got a brand new one out called The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy and How to End It. This book investigates and examines many subjects and aspects of the conspiracy and connects the dots. The picture that appears once you understand how it all fits together is astounding. This is the book that will wake up the masses and reveal at last in an undeniable way the incredible level of control a covert and evil controlling force has had over humanity for thousands of years. I'm looking forward to talk more about his latest book, new research, latest developments and much more. Before we say hello to our guest, I just want to mention David's website, davidicke.com, up-to-date news, newsletters and much more. If you don't know about it, you need to get yourself over there right away and take a good look around. Much more for you to discover and dive deeper into. Welcome back to the program, David, and thank you for coming on Red Ice Creations Radio.
It's a pleasure, Henrik.
It's a pleasure to have you here. You know, I was thinking here as I was going through some notes for our program today. You're continuing to put out new material all the time. Now you got a new book out. You produce videos. You do lectures or talks now and then. You have an excellent newsletter that you write every week. You keep a very up-to-date website as well. And it's not like it's becoming less, you know, crap to highlight and talk about, but also positive developments are coming to the surface, and things are moving rather quickly in some areas. Do you find it more difficult or actually easier to keep up with it all?
Well, it's a different challenge these days. I mean, there are various challenges in my life which relate to people trying to undermine what I'm doing, which I guess you would expect. So that's one level of it. But it's a very different challenge to what it was when I started out nearly 20 years ago. The challenge then was to get anyone to show any interest at all. What's happened, however, is since 9/11 particularly, I think, and certainly since the invasions of Afghanistan and particularly Iraq, a lot of people have begun to look at the world and think, I just don't like what's going on. This doesn't just not feel right, what's happening. And it's not easy to understand and articulate to yourself why you feel uneasy. I mean, there are basic things like invading countries and stuff like that, but it goes deeper than that. And what I've done with the new book is connect the dots so that people who feel uneasy about the world, something doesn't feel right, can now see why it doesn't feel right and why certain things happen that in isolation seem to be one thing, but when connected to many other dots, people, events, they take on a very different kind of vision of what's actually going on. Mm. You can look at the invasion of Iraq in isolation and you can see it on that level. But when you connect it to endless other dots, you can see that everything from the economic situation to additives in food to the electromagnetic pollution that we're getting now to global warming and what we're told is the cause of it, all these different things are actually connected, and when the dots are connected, the world starts to make sense. When we look at it without the background research, it can seem very, very chaotic, very random.
Yeah.
And some of it is, but when you really get behind it and you understand the coordinates being where this network of interbreeding, manipulating families want to take the world, and how they are using certain techniques of mass mind and emotional manipulation to get us there. Once you have those coordinates, then you start to see the world in a very different way, and what appeared to be chaotic and it often bureaucratic stupidity turns out to be cold, calculated design, and that's what the book's doing. In fact, there's 28 chapters, and I'm actually calling the chapters dots, because it's when you connect the dots that you can see the picture. And because you have to research so many different subjects, vastly different subjects, before you can see how they fit together, I'm just letting people have the access to this 20 years of research I've done, so that they don't have to do it all themselves. It takes a long time, I can tell you.
That's right. I guess that one of the jobs, so to speak, that you have is to kind of constantly also, you know, distill or boil down, so to speak, the information, so making it more and more efficient, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, the more you do it, you start to see certain explanations, certain ways of explaining things, get people to understand what's going on better than others, and so you do hone down and you get more efficient on the way you communicate the information.
Yeah.
But the key things are to understand where these hidden shadow people, as I call them, are manipulating the world towards. That is a centralized fascist state, which is based on, or certainly is encompassed by George Orwell's 1984, and then some. Actually, he was probably understating the situation. They want to create a world government which would control all the major decisions in the world, which would control a world bank, a world central bank, different to the World Bank we have now, which would dictate and control all global finance, a world currency, which in the end wouldn't be physical cash at all, it would just be electronic money, for which there are fundamental implications for freedom, and they want a microchip population connected to a global computer. And of course, when I started talking about that and writing about that 10 years ago and more, people thought it was hilarious, but they're not now, because the people are being microchipped. And even the excuses that I said they'd use to do it are being used, like, oh, well, we must microchip Alzheimer's patients, or microchip your children, then they'll never get lost, and all the rest of it. So that's the game, fundamental centralization of power. And the world government would also control a world army. And a journalist said to me many years ago, what's the point in having a world army? Because there'd be no one to fight. And I thought, you're a journalist, aren't you? But the world army is there to impose the will of the world government upon the people. And
well,
this is why we're having now this mantra about international law. All the time, people are talking about international law. We must change international law. We must have international law. And what is that? International law is a law that everyone on the planet must obey. And so international law is actually this global centralized fascist state coming into place. And the European Union is just the most advanced of four super states that they want underneath the world government. They want the European Union, they want the American Union, eventually for the whole of the Americas, and they're very close now to bringing in the North American Union, which is Canada, United States, and Mexico.
Yeah.
They want the African Union, which of course is already there, and they want an Asia-Pacific Union for that part of the world, all mirrors of the European Union. And then what we call nation states today would just be administrative units to impose the will of the edifice of power above them. And when you look at the way the world is going, that's happening all the time. By the day that's coming in, we now have this European treaty to replace the Constitution, and the treaty and the Constitution are the same. They've just changed the name to try to hide the fact that they're creating a centralized United States of Europe in which the few will dictate to the whole of Europe. They're already doing it. They just want to advance it even more. And these things are not happening by accident or randomly. They are long planned. The European Union that is coming in now is exactly the structure that was planned from the start. But of course, if they back in the 40s and 50s, after the Second World War, when goodness knows how many people were slaughtered and maimed fighting to stop Hitler taking over Europe and creating a centralized fascist state in Europe, if that had been offered, what we're now having in Europe had been offered immediately after the war, people would have said, hold on, we're not having this, we've just fought to stop this. Yeah. But what they've done is have what I call the totalitarian tiptoe, one step following another step, one following another step, just taking away more and more power from countries to the center, until now countries have no power if Europe says the opposite. And the same is happening with our freedoms. It's being taken away step by step by step by step. And in the end, people get to a point and they just look back a few years and they see just how far they've come down the road to tyranny, and it's been done step by step by step. So a lot of people just haven't seen it until they put it all together and see how far we've come.
That's right, that's right. And again, we're modeling, and we can see the similarities between the US and the EU. They're talking about bringing in a president in the EU, and also, of course, very recently they announced that we're going to have our own Council on Foreign Relations over here. Isn't that great,
eh? Yeah, absolutely. The thing is that it's a very simple equation. If the few want to control the many, you have to centralize decision making. You can't control the many from a central point if there's great diversity of decision making in people's communities, in people's towns, in people's countries. You can't. There's too many points of decision making. You can't control all of those. So what you have to do is centralized decision making, and the more you do that, the fewer people are dictating to the lives of more and more. And of course, the another part of this is the more you centralize power, the more power you then have to centralize even quicker. And that's why this process of centralization in all areas of our lives, not just politics and government, but in business ownership, media ownership, all of it, has got faster and faster and faster, and will continue to do so until people stand up in enough numbers and say, enough, we're not having it anymore. Because the point to make is that the few can only control the many when the many allow it to happen.
That's right.
You know, the power that these few have to control is the power the many give to them every day. And we have a situation where there's this idea that you mustn't disobey the law. Well, hold on a second. If someone passed a law tomorrow that said your children are going to be taken away, would you obey it? Oh, no, they say, wouldn't do that. Well, so there's a point, there's a line in the sand where you draw a line and say, no, we're not having this. So where should the line really be drawn? And it should be drawn a long way forward from that. Because if we have a situation where dark suits, usually men in dark suits overwhelmingly, are making decisions without any input from the people and bringing certain laws in, and then the people just say, well, it's the law, we've got to obey it, then we might as well just get the handcuffs out now and just go quietly, because there's no way that we're going to have any effect on this Orwellian, gathering Orwellian state, if we're not going to resist the imposition of it.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
That's right. And in a way, I see that this also is connected with the fact that what you brought up in the beginning here, you know, with the additives and all of this, the attention span is actually, you know, it's narrowing down, so to speak, and people can't even remember. And what you're talking about here is seeing the big picture, and that is what people is having difficulty with.
Well, this new book is the big picture. I mean, it's, first of all, it's the biggest work I've ever done, and probably the biggest work I will ever do. But it's connecting these dots. I mean, for instance, the human body is, in effect, a highly advanced computer, and it's a biological computer, i.e. has the ability to make decisions and assess information without actually being told how to do it. And it's a vehicle for consciousness to express itself in this reality, this tiny frequency range or holographic television channel that we call the physical world, that we think we experience every day. If you can isolate body consciousness from higher consciousness, then you entrap people in a tiny fraction of their infinite self. And once you trap people in body consciousness, they, instead of getting their point of observation from the great infinite consciousness that we are, it looks through the eyes and hears through the ears. That's where it gets its information from to get a fix on itself and the world. Mm. And who controls that? The very network of bloodline families that I've been writing about for nearly 20 years control the information that people receive. They control what people are taught in schools and colleges and universities. They control overwhelmingly what is bravely passed off as news and current affairs. They control the information that the overwhelming majority of people receive through the mainstream media. And if you do not have the filter mechanism for that, of being open to a much greater vastness of consciousness, so that you can see through that, then you can become mesmerized by it, and you become enslaved in the five senses. And the vast majority of people on this planet, I would suggest, are in that state.
Mm, yeah.
They're in a state of fractional awareness compared with the infinite awareness that they really are. They're like rabbits caught in the headlights of an oncoming car.
Hmm.
And when we talk about people waking up, and the number of people I've met over the last 20 years or so have said to me, "My goodness me, I've woken up. I can see it now. Why couldn't I see it before?" Well, literally, waking up is the phrase, because the human race is in a hypnotic trance, and it's been put there by constant repetition of information, or what passes for it, that is telling us what reality is.
Mm.
And most people have bought that, and why shouldn't they? That's all they hear most of the time, from cradle to grave. And so they have become like a stooge on the stage in a hypnotist show. A hypnotist can implant a belief into the mind and subconscious mind of the stooge, so that they'll eat a potato but taste an apple, where they'll see the woman next to them on the stage naked when they're fully clothed, who will see an elephant in the audience, and because the implantation of belief transfers itself to apparent experience. What we perceive, we believe, and what we believe, we experience. This is happening all the time. The greatest hypnotist in the world is the oblong box in the corner of the room.
Yep.
Which is 24 hours a day now, pouring out implanted messages telling us what reality is, what's possible and impossible, what's good and bad, what's moral and immoral, what to be frightened of all the time. Hey, I've got something else for you to be frightened of. Watch this program. And isn't it funny? Television programs, and that's what they are overwhelmingly. They are programs, mind programs, that are implanting a false reality. So when people say they've woken up, and my goodness me, I can see it now.
Mm.
They've woken up from that trance, or begun to. And that's why suddenly they can see things and perceive things and understand things that they simply couldn't see before. It's because they've moved their point of observation from just five-sense reality to a much bigger, wider point of observation, higher in their realms of consciousness.
That's right. And what I guess I see a little bit on the horizon, and this connects with what you mentioned before here with the microchip and so forth, is basically, you know, the concept of the new man, basically, and probably where potentially the human species is going to split into two different directions, it seems like. What I've been looking at basically in the last year or so and research is what is happening to the human race. The next step, you know, in evolution or whatever we want to call it, the introduction of the Borg, the joining with the machine, or even going into the Matrix and actually hooking up, you know, with a worldwide mind. This literally means implanting an interface with microprocessors at your brainstem, or optic cable in nano size that is connected to the nerves in your brain, wireless connection to this global brain. And this will probably create or spawn some kind of overclass, or, you know, Übermensch, if you want to, you know, have that terminology on it. And since you've been talking about the microchip, I see that this is a big part of the picture here, but also see that this is, there's so many more components coming in now in regards to technology about this. And basically a nightmare scenario is beginning to open up here. Any thoughts on this?
Well, the reason that they're talking about having a computer-human interface, as they call it, where the computer is connected to the physical body, is very simple. The physical body is also a computer. That's how they can do it. The two are compatible. One is infinitely more advanced. Of course it is. But it's still the basic same principle, and that's why they can interface the two. Mm. And the microchip is the jewel in the crown of this whole conspiracy, because they are... Not encouraging the idea, because they don't want people to think about the real reason of microchips at all. But they're not so disappointed if people are talking about the fact that microchipping is just for electronic tagging, so the computer knows where everyone is. And on one level, that's a byproduct of it, yes. But the real reason for the microchip is it hijacks the thought and emotional processes of the body. You know, when we feel emotion or we have thoughts, it is an electrochemical process.
Yeah.
That's what happens. If you can access that network, that electrical chemical network, then you can start to dictate thought and emotion. I mean, you know, you get stories like we had a few years ago where a lady was in clinical depression for 40 years. And she was in and out of institutions, and she had a terrible life for 40 years, until someone said to her, can you think of anything that happened around the time you went into this depression? Because it happened very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, the only thing I could think of is I had, I think it was 19 teeth fillings. And, of course, the teeth fillings were with mercury.
Yeah.
She was advised to have the fillings removed and to go on a mercury detox. When she did that, the depression of 40 years, which was so deep that she was in institutions, like I say, disappeared.
Hmm.
Now, that is what a chemical, metal chemical, can do to someone's emotions. Imagine when you have a microchip inside, which is designed specifically to manipulate these electrical chemical processes that we call thought and emotion. And that's the idea. The brain is like the central processing unit of the computer, and the CPU, as they call it in computer technology, is a microchip.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what the microchip's really there for. And a CIA scientist who was talking to me, because he was trying to get information out of what was going on back in about 97, he told me about the microchip, and he said it's not just for electronic tagging. He said it's not the messages going from the chip to the computer that are the most important. It's the messages coming from the computer to the chip, because he said they can isolate an individual or a group of people en masse and manipulate their mental and emotional states. because they're manipulating the computer. And the way to overcome all this is to become conscious, because most people are not actually conscious. I mean, they have a conscious mind, but that's the computer level of reality, the five sense level of reality. Mm. Their deeper consciousness they're disconnected from. And we need to open our minds and start to connect with these other realms. And what prevents us doing that is belief systems, overwhelmingly. Religious belief systems, political belief systems, status belief systems. And when we have a blank sheet of paper and we let all that go, and we look with an open mind at things again, without letting belief systems filter and edit the information, to defend the belief, then we can start then to see the world from a much higher point of perspective. Yeah. and overcome some of these things that are going on now, because the manipulation is the manipulation of human perception. It manifests itself as banking scams and political scams and centralization of power, but the real bottom line of this whole conspiracy, this whole creation of the Orwellian global state, is the manipulation of human perception. And if you know that what we perceive and believe we will experience, just for instance, on a simple level, if you believe and perceive that you are powerless, you will live a powerless life, not because you are, but because you believe you are, then you therefore manifest that reality. Mm. You can see in simple things like a football game. You've got a team playing another team, and one team is all over the other. The other team can't string any passes together. They're having a terrible time. Their belief is that, you know, the other team's better, and the other team score, and the other team score again, and it's underpinning this belief system. Oh my goodness me, you know, this is we're bound to lose this. Yeah. And then the team losing just gets a kind of a goal out of nothing. And suddenly, just because they put a bag of wind in a net, they start then to transform the way they play. They are now attacking the other team. Now suddenly they're getting passes together. Why? Because they've suddenly become better footballers in 30 seconds? No, because their mind has changed. Their perception and belief has changed, and therefore their experience changes as a result of that. Mm. Now, when you take that onto the level of mass manipulation, if you know how this process works, because that's the knowledge that's been passed across the generations at the highest levels of the secret society network to these bloodline successors through the years. If you know how that works, but you have structured society to stop the people in general knowing how that works, then you can control people's reality and therefore people's behavior.
That's right.
Without them having any clue whatsoever that you're doing that. Hmm. Because they're perceiving life as random, as a matter of good luck and bad luck. Mm. While you know in the shadows that you are implanting a belief in reality into the people through all the mass media and what we call education. And once implanting that belief, the person's belief will manifest the experience based on that belief. Yeah. That's how the people are kept in servitude. That's how people are kept in enslavement, through manipulating and implanting their sense of reality.
That's right. Absolutely right. Couldn't agree more. And, you know, speaking about implanting, you know, perception, so to speak, I want to change gears a little bit and talk a little bit about Iran. This is possibly something that could develop into something really big, but what kind of bugs me, so to speak, about this is that we have this constant chattering, so to speak, about it. You know, advisors, think tank groups, everyone from Kissinger to Brzezinski to Condoleezza Rice or whatever, are going out and talking about that, you know, they should invade Iran and this is the time and all of this. But yet, on one level, nothing actually is happening. I mean, is it just fear-mongering, or do you think that they actually will go in, and could this then develop into something big?
Oh, I think they want to go in. I mean, when you go back to the document produced by the Project for the New American Century, which was created and peopled by the those that dominated and have dominated the Bush administration since it was, since it was not elected, people like Cheney and Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and all these people were involved in the Project for the New American Century, and they produced a document in September 2000 in which they named the countries they wanted to target, and one of them was Iraq, and they talked about the invading of Iraq and removing Saddam Hussein. They talked about Iran. They talked about North Korea. And the Axis of Evil speech delivered by Bush in the State of the Union address, I think it was in 2002, mm-hmm. Where he talked about the Axis of Evil of Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. That speech was written by a guy called David Frum, mm. one of his speechwriters, who is one of these so-called neoconservatives or neocons that was connected to the Project for the New American Century and the network that connects into it, like the American Enterprise Institute. So in that document, they actually laid out the agenda that they wanted, and many other things too. Mm. Indeed, in that document, it says that this process of transformation, i.e. process of global control, would be slow and laborious, absent some catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. Mm. And what happened, of course, 9 months after the Bush administration came to power, full of the people behind that document, and a year to the month after the document was published, America had what Bush actually called at the time our Pearl Harbor, 9/11. And that 9/11 was used, and is still used, as the excuse to advance the agenda that that document outlined. So they went into Iraq, and it's no surprise or, you know, shock that it's coming to light now, and indeed it's documented in my books, that the plan for the invasion of Iraq was started years before they actually started publicly talking about it. And so what did they have to do? Their agenda was to invade Iraq. So what do they need? They need an excuse to invade Iraq. And of course, I have this phrase that I came up with some years ago, problem, reaction, solution, for a mass manipulation technique, which involves creating a problem covertly, like a terrorist bomb or whatever, getting the people to only hear your version of that through the mainstream media, which tells them the version of that event that you want them to believe. You want them to say something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it, the reaction. Mm. And that allows you then to openly offer the solutions to the problems you've covertly created, which are changes in legislation and society that advance your Orwellian state. But there is another version of that, which I call no problem reaction solution, where you don't need a real problem, you just need to get the people to have a perception that there's a problem. Mm. And of course, that's what they did with weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
Yeah.
There was no problem, but they gave a perception of a problem, and as a result, they went in and bombed and slaughtered goodness knows how many grotesque numbers of people.
Yeah.
And now they say, oh, it's a mess and it's terrible. Hold on, yes, but they're still there. Hmm. And while it's a mess, they're going to continue to be there. They don't want an excuse to leave. It's the last thing they want.
Of course.
On the shadow people level. So what's happening now, Henrik, is that we're seeing Iraq Mark II with Iran, whereby we're in the same situation. They have an agenda to take over Iran and to use it to spark a wider conflict, which is what I've been talking about for the best part of 20 years. They want a conflict with China that will create a global problem, which they can then offer a global solution to, so it must never happen again, and that will be the world government, the world army, and all the rest of it. That's where it's leading. China. Then you just watch that unfold. I was saying that on radio shows like in 1996.
Hmm.
You watch it unfolding. Anyway, what we're looking at now is them desperately running around trying to sell an excuse to trigger the conflict with Iran. And this sanctions thing that's just been announced, new sanctions against Iran,
mm-hmm, yeah,
are all part of it, because what they did with Japan, part of the antagonism of Japan that led to Pearl Harbor, which they knew was going to happen, it was just another 9/11, to justify America going into the Second World War, is that they had they imposed sanctions against Japan, which antagonized them. And what did they do in the run-up to Iraq? They had sanctions against them that, even according to UN figures, cost the lives of at least 500,000 children in Iraq in the 1990s.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at now. We're looking at attempt desperately to find an excuse to target Iran. But, you know, don't let's kid ourselves that this is all coming to an end as soon as Bush is out of power. Bush is irrelevant to this. He's just a puppet, like they all are.
Yeah.
And the whether it's a Democratic president or a Republican president, the same agenda goes on because they're all controlled by the same force.
Of course.
The sanctions against Iraq I've just talked about were imposed by Clinton.
Yeah.
And then we have Bush follow him, and the whole thing continues. And the person they want next is Hillary Clinton, who makes George Bush look like a sissy. I mean, as presidents go, she is high in the satanic hierarchy in America.
Mm-hmm.
And when she gets in, then things are designed and planned to really kick off. So it's not that people say, oh, well, the Bush presidency is running down now and all this stuff. No, no. It's preparing to hand the baton to the next front person for this whole agenda. And like I say, you know, I mean, it's a Tea Party compared with Bush, compared with Clinton. This woman is a serious, serious piece of work. And in the new book,
mm-hmm,
I've gone into some of the background to the Clintons, and I tell you what, it is horrific.
Do you know if she actually is connected in some way by blood to some of these families? Do you know something
well,
about that?
Well, they all are. And you know, you've now got George Bush in the last few weeks making statements in support of Hillary Clinton, who she's a Democrat, and she's supposed to be in a different party.
Mm.
The connections now between Bill Clinton and Father George Bush are so close that they're talking about it almost being like father and son.
Yeah, that's
right. Well, hold on a second. I know for an absolute fact, and I go into it in this new book, that Bill Clinton and Father George Bush and the Bush family and the Clintons have been bosom buddies going way, way back before Clinton ever came to power as a president. And if you look at it, Henrik, you know, people live so often with cliches that become their image of how things are. So the more you repeat that America is the land of the free and America is the home of the brave and all this stuff, then one of the greatest forms of mind control is repetition.
Yep.
But when you look at it, we have in America at the moment 300 million people or thereabouts. And one of the things that is produced as confirmation that it is a free country, freest country in the world, is that anyone can become president. Now, that is probably one of the most ludicrous statements it is possible to utter. And when you look at it, Reagan came to power in 1980 with Father George Bush as vice president. The truth is, absolutely the truth is, that wasn't the Reagan-Bush administration, it was the Bush-Reagan administration.
Mm-hmm.
Reagan was there to read the autocue, do his B-movie acting bit, so that Bush, who was not in morally saleable commodity, Father Bush, could get into the White House and run the show, which he did for two terms.
Mm-hmm.
Then, on the back of that Reagan-Bush period, Father Bush got a period of his own for 4 years. He then hands over to Bill Clinton, bosom buddies with the Bush family, who got two terms. Then he handed over to boy George Bush, who's had two terms.
Yeah.
And in 2008, we could have elected, because that's the plan, another Clinton until, what, 2012? Possibly 2016, if she gets two terms.
Yeah.
From 1980, two families, both as close as they come, being presidents of the United States and in control of or at least symbolically in control of that country.
Yeah.
When anyone can become president, and it's the freest country in the world. I mean, take a deep breath. Take a step back, look at it again. It's a total stitch-up, quite demonstrably.
That's
and the
right.
idea is that by the time that enough people realize what the game is, the edifice and structure of control, surveillance, and all the rest of it will be such that it will be very, very difficult to do anything about it.
Mm.
This is why we have a window of time now where people like me are trying to get this information out into the public arena and having more and more success in doing so, I have to say,
mm-hmm.
and get an exponential curve of people waking up to this,
yeah.
So that we can bring an end to this nonsense before they get to the point where the cell door finally clicks shut.
Hmm. Exactly, and that also says something about the potential of the knowledge that is up on the level, so to speak, of the top guys at the pyramid, that they know that some kind of awakening process is taking place, either if they themselves are into how, you know, the ages or something like that come and go, and they know that, okay, this is a new era coming in here, we're moving into something new, and we have to have the control grid, as it were, in place before this actually happens, you know?
That's exactly right, because that brings us to a very important point, which is global warming. There are many levels to this. Global warming is caused, staggeringly, because who would have thought it, by the sun, by increased solar radiation, and by changes happening in the sun. And this is connected to changes that take place in cycles. And it's also connected to the Maya prophecies about 2012. I don't think 2012 is a year in 1 hour, on one day, in 1 year, where some fantastic change is going to take place. I think it is symbolic of a window whereby a terrific change is taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's going to get more and more obvious that changes are taking place. So what we've got with this scam of blaming it on human-created carbon dioxide is a way to bring in international law, again, on a massive scale, which is what they're trying to do, to justify creaming more taxes from people to fight global warming, and what they call carbon taxes and environmental taxes. And most importantly, to provide an explanation for the change that's taking place. And it's not caused by human-created carbon dioxide. I've gone into that in this book in some detail.
Mm-hmm.
It's created by changes in the sun. And these changes in the sun are connected to this energetic change that I was told about nearly 20 years ago was coming. How it would act as like a spiritual alarm clock to wake people up from their hypnotic state, which it is demonstrably doing.
Mm.
And so this whole Al Gore sham, scam, and farce, a practicing Satanist like Al Gore actually cares about humanity and the planet. Yeah, okay, pull the other one, you know. And he's got the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yeah, exactly.
The Oscar for his ludicrous documentary, An Inconvenient Truth, simply because that was all fixed to highlight his profile and highlight what he's lying to people about, which is that it's carbon emissions that are doing it.
Yeah.
It's the sun that's doing it, and put it this way, we've seen nothing yet.
Hmm. Do you think that this is about creating kind of a new, what should we call it, underclass or even serfdom, that this is about also... We had a small time here, frame, so to speak, where we could enjoy some of these, you know, technologies that were brought forth by, mainly by the elites to some degree, I guess, you know, the cars, you know, and all the products in the stores and so forth. But it feels like this is sending out the message here that, okay, now it's time to begin to actually ease down on this again. We're not supposed to enjoy some of these, freedoms that this actually, you know, does bring about, to have some kind of technologically, live in a society that has this kind of technology, you know.
Well, technology is a good thing when it's benign and it's used for the benefit of people. Technology is a horrific thing when it's used in a destructive way, both environmentally and in other ways, and it's used to control people. And it's not that technology is good or bad, it's what's the technology and what's the reason for it.
Yeah.
And much of the technology that is has been introduced, which on one level has seemed to be a good thing in some ways, actually has an underlying background reason, which is anything but good. It's about control. It's about the ability to have centralization of power. For instance, we talk about computers and all the rest of it, and on one level it's wonderful, but it's given the elite the ability to have global control. Without computers, they couldn't do it in the same way. And also, computers are just wonderful vehicles for surveillance of people and gathering profiles of people and background of people. And it's also made the society that we live in incredibly dependent on an external technology. I was in an airport in... it was Sydney Airport, actually, a few years ago in Australia, and the Qantas computer system went down, and it was absolutely chaotic. This is just one computer system.
Mm.
Now, computers are dependent upon electricity. So if the electrical system goes down, then the computer system goes down, then the whole system goes down. If you look at money now, I mean, money is overwhelmingly figures on a screen passing through computer systems. You can wipe those systems very easily. And so they have the potential for creating enormous chaos. And the 33rd degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry has a motto, Ordo ab Chao, order out of chaos, problem, reaction, solution.
Mm.
Create the chaos. Get people dependent upon you, they think, to sort out the chaos, and then offer the solution to the chaos that advances the kind of society that you want. I think what we're going to see in the Clinton years is the manipulation of more and more chaos, financial chaos and other things.
Mm.
9/11 was not the end of their manufactured horrors to... justify advancing the Orwellian state. It was just another step on it.
Yeah.
There are more to come, and this is why it's so vital that people are aware of what the game is, so that they can read the game as it's played and not sit in a prison cell with a guard at the door thinking, I can see it now, I realize what is going on now. Yeah, bit too late, my dear, a bit too late.
And, that's why they need to get your book, of course, to kind of begin to connect these dots and to be able to see this entire picture. And I think that this is a good place to round things off for the first segment, David, but I want to, people who are interested in getting a copy of your latest book, how would they easiest go about doing that?
All they have to do is go to davidicke.com, and they can pre-order it. The books are just coming off the presses now. I've just had the first copy sent to me today, so they're going to be ready to ship very, very soon. And that's the best way, the quickest way of getting it. It will be in the shops, of course, but it's going to take longer before it's all out into the shops.
All right, so head on over to davidicke.com and take a look how to pre-order or order the book from there on. We're going to continue talking with David more in the subscribers section and get into. I want to ask David a little bit more about 2012 and the Solar Max that is potentially connected with this. I want to talk a little bit about Peru and much, much more, Blackwater and stuff like that. But David and I are going to take a short break, but we'll continue in the next segment. But for this segment, thank you so much for coming on, David.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into the program. We'll continue our conversation with David in our subscriber section, and we're going to talk more about the reptilian aspect in humanity and how this is being targeted, the entities behind the veil, and we'll also talk more about David's experience in Peru that kick-started it all. Is there a guiding force that is directing events, helping us out? We'll also talk more about the implication of the year 2012 and what potentially is on the horizon in the years to come. So subscribers, get ready for an excellent continuation of our interview with David Icke. You'll find all the information on how you can tune in over at redicecreations.com. Upcoming guests, we have Joseph P. Farrell, Stuart Swerdlow, and Tom Horn. Also, if you haven't already, check out our latest short film up in the new member section called Longevity and the Grail, and much more is on the way. Thanks to Fredrik behind the controls. This is Henrik Palmgren. Until next time, all the best and take good care.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown. Like a dog without a bone. And actor out of riders on the storm. There's a killer on the road. His brain is squirming like a toad. Take a long holiday. Let your children play. If you give this man a ride, sweet family will die. Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown. Like a dog without a bone. An actor out on loan. Riders on the storm. Thank you.